Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to please to the calling.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, and also the vice president of grains at Sizz's Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, not much. Just like I told you prior to recording here, I'm like a pinball this week. I'm all over the place. So just trying to make heads and tails of grain moves and, you know, trade war talk and all of the fun stuff in between. So,
give us your read of what does that all mean now? So you heard the information, you saw the initial reaction, and I immediately said you got to be a buyer on that stuff. But what did you see and what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I said it this morning. Someone said, you know, are we going to see some buyers jump in? And I said, you first, but. You know, the truth is for anyone that had some sideways positions on or needed the market to move lower to get some coverage in place and stuff like that, you know, it was definitely an opportunity on the soybean side of things. And I will say that I had a conversation with my boss this morning because he called and asked, you know, how are we set up? What are we doing? You know, what does this mean for us as a company? And I said, well, my job is to manage our risk. Our risk is managed, meaning that we have no exposure. You know, our biggest concern is this basis, the difference between cash price and futures, which is what I trade. You know, if that collapses, so if the demand disappears from an export standpoint, then it could cause issues for us this coming harvest because a substantial amount of our bushels go to the Toledo market to be loaded on boats and shipped elsewhere. But reality is, for me and for most of my producers, you know, this has been anticipated to happen. You know, we've been expecting to see this type of announcement for weeks now. And so it wasn't necessarily what you would call a surprise. Shocking, yes, but not necessarily a surprise. And so really, from an overall standpoint, on days like this, there's tons of opportunities for guys to come in and scalp and do different trades like that. But for my farmers that are working on their hedging and managing their risk, a lot of times I tell them to just shut the screen off and walk away. And that's what they do. I mean, honestly, my phone's been dead today. And that's the way it should be in the position that I am in.
So what did you make out of the news, and what did you make out of China buying so many soybeans after they got creamed?
Well, I can tell you the sale that was put on was done yesterday, and basis has done nothing but stink up the place for the last month or so. You know, I mentioned the Toledo market there, and my buyer had called me, you know, 2-3 weeks ago and said, hey, if this China tariff news hits, you know, harvest basis is going to be awful. You need to be selling us some beans now, yada, yada, yada. I wasn't a seller at that point in time, just simply because there's a whole lot of news coming our way and other things to be concerned about over the next 5-6 months versus, you know, this short term struggle. But you've seen basis really, really collapse from an export standpoint, you know, as a result of this. And so yesterday's opportunity was one where they could lock in that wider basis, which is what cash markets are, you know, that's what they function on. That's what they live on, is the difference between cash price and futures. So a wide basis means that your cash price is cheaper. And so they were able to lock in that wide basis. And then overnight, of course, you had a 48 cent dip. I'm not saying they necessarily bought on the low by any means, but it was a great opportunity. And we've said it 1,000 times before. China is, it knows, you know, they've written, you know, the rules when it comes to foreign trade in a lot of ways. And so you know, to me, I think, is there a concern long term that if we were to get into a trade war or see these tariffs remain in place, that we could see a dip in overall sales to China? Yeah. Could they have a negative influence on the soybean market as a whole? You know, sure. But did it mean that we needed to drop 48 cents and you know, maybe trade limit down and continue in a limit down fashion for an extended period of time? No. You know, and so for me, what I made out of the news is that we were going to, you know, we were going to see a short term hit at the very least. But I don't anticipate it to be something that is going to necessarily last forever. It may limit our upside, you know, in the short term. But I don't think we have to go to zero by any means just because of this announcement.
Well, why does it? I mean, are we going to stop? I got to ask the question: are we going to stop eating? Are we going to stop feeding our animals? There is not enough throughout, especially with what's going on in some of the other markets. Anyways, they're going to have to buy from us. So if there's going to be a tariff involved, I mean, we're not going to lose all of a sudden. They're not going to start buying. They need the product. It's not like they can live without the product. No. What do you think?
Well, you've already seen it. I mean, okay, so today we had all of this announcement and we had the market collapse. Okay, so everyone be sad for a minute. However, what you just saw is Brazil's offers, because they now know that they're in the driver's seat. Argentina isn't going to be able to provide a huge amount of bushels for them, of course, with their production loss and the fact that they don't export whole beans anyway. They just came out and May, June, July paper openly bidding. You know, they're offering a you know, well over the market. They just exploded over the May board with no offers. So basically, what you're seeing right now is the folks in Brazil, the sellers in Brazil, are like, okay, sure, you're going to make us the only provider in town. That's cool. We just got a raise, a substantial raise. And so you saw that explode without any offers, because they're saying you're going to have to pay us this much. The Brazilian farmer is realizing that he's the only show in town, or they or he, she are the only show in town. And so they're not going to be in a huge hurry to sell. And so what you saw is basis exploded to the upside in Brazil. And now you're seeing it. New Orleans basis went up 35 cents. So basically, basis absorbed the entire board loss at the time that you and I are talking. So from a farmer standpoint, who is in you know, in the trenches and able to get into the Gulf market and stuff like that, you know, they won't necessarily notice any substantial change today, since that basis firmed and Brazil right now is not making any real offers. So from an overall standpoint, yeah, everyone has to eat. The supply needs to go. You know, like I said before, could you see a dip in overall demand? Could it have an influence on the market from a negative standpoint long term? Sure. But is it enough to freak out and run out of the room screaming like your hair's on fire? No. Everyone just needs to take a chill pill and let this thing kind of play out.
Well, I mean, I think that's one of the things that we you and I talk about all the time. I mean, this is, you know, the old classic: shoot first, ask questions later. And I think that's always a mistake. And I was on Rural Rally Radio and I said, hey, you know, you need to be buying down here if you're going to do anything. I wouldn't worry. This is a classic case of over evaluating what's going on in the market. When we come back, we'll talk more with Angie about the trade wars and what they really mean, because I don't think they mean a heck of a lot, to be honest with you. So, and I think actually it'll be better for everybody when it's all said and done. But in the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, we're with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, don't forget to download the Bubba Show every single day at libertytalk.fm. You can get the Bubba Show, the Sporting Edge, and our new show, the Crypto Investor X, as well as full regular programming 24 hours a day. And of course, don't forget to get my daily update, which I know Angie loves, every day after the market closes. I send you an update telling you what I saw during that day and what I expect to see tomorrow. So you get basically tomorrow's newspaper today. That's at BubbaTrading.com. It's free. Go check it out. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, you're with Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, at Goddess of Grains on Twitter. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, and also the goddess of grains at Twitter and the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. Angie, I say that the trade wars can only help everybody when it's all said and done. And I think that we shouldn't be worried about it at all because, A, there's too many things going on. And this would be the same as declaring a nuclear war, which would be the end of the world. And that's not going to happen. So what do you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important point in this entire thing is that people have to eat. And I had a conversation with a big group of farmers here a week ago in North Dakota. And one of the biggest points that we talked about is the increase in demand out of the developing countries in the world and the fact that, you know, China's middle class is growing leaps and bounds and has a certain expectation when it comes to their diet. They want good, cheap, convenient foods. And that, you know, kind of hinges upon solid pork supply, you know, and of pork and beef and things like that. They eat a boatload of meal every day, soybean meal. And so you have this substantial desire, to continue this policy. And I always say that hungry people are, you know, hungry people do not follow rules. And so the last thing the Chinese government wants is hungry people. And so that is the saving grace when it comes to everyone panicking about this from an overall standpoint is the demand's going to stay. You know, they might be able to sandbag a little bit to where they're not in and buying an excessive amount. But we obviously saw the announcement this morning that they were buying beans. We're obviously seeing it from Brazil. I mean, Brazil they're great at ruining a good opportunity presented to them. You know what I mean? So what happens, and I think it's across the board in agriculture, a lot of times greed tends to kill any sort of opportunity that is put in place. And that's what you're seeing right now. Obviously, you know, what I was just talking about with the basis increases. So that, you know, Brazil could be a supplier and they could be a whole product supplier. They could be a meal supplier. They could step in and really do a lot of the things that need to be done. But the reality is they're going to say, all right, well, pay up, you know, you pay me. Like that's obviously we're the only supplier. So where else are you going to get it? And so eventually it's going to negate the tariffs that are in place. And you saw China lower the percentage of the VAT, the value added tax that they had on soybeans, I believe, yesterday, which would help to alleviate some of the cost increase via the whole bean tariff. So, you know, a lot of it right now is like I said, tons of noise. You know, tons of opportunity for those who are looking to scalp or spec trade a market. And for those of us that are working with farmers on managing and protecting our risk, we're already covered in so many ways that a day like today is just that noise. So for me, from an overall standpoint, you know, I feel that, you know, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, we're probably not going to be necessarily as fixated upon this as what we have been. Now, you and I have talked quite often about how beans were overpriced anyway. And so, you know, really, I think this has kind of brought them back to earth in a certain standpoint where, you know, everyone had focused on what was going on in Argentina. Everyone had focused on, you know, lower than anticipated planted acres released in last week's USDA report. And now I think we can kind of maybe get a grip on reality a little bit more where, hey, you know, even if the Chinese tariff doesn't mean anything, we still have a lot of beans available to the global market, you know, from our standpoint and from the South American standpoint. So it's definitely something that, you know, like I said, in a matter of weeks, if not months, we probably won't even be really talking about this. You know, maybe it's better this way. We pulled the Band-Aid off and now we can figure out where we go from here.
Well, I'm afraid that as happens often, even, you know, I talk about weather, trying to trade weather markets and all this other stuff. I'm afraid that every time it comes up, there's going to be this kind of action. Now, fortunately for me, I happen to be up when it happened, and I happen to buy corn at 374 and wheat at 450. You know, well, I mean, again, I've seen this movie before, and it's not anywhere near a problem. I don't see how we can make this into an issue, into a problem, because it's going to, at the end of the day, it's going to benefit us. You know, if you know the tariffs of what we pay versus what they pay. I mean, just for example, on cars, we pay 25% tariff to send a car there. They pay 2.5% to send one back. We pay much higher on wheat than we take back. So it can only benefit the farmer and producer at the end of the day when it's all said and done, because that's the advantage that we're going to create. Okay. So again, when you look at it, we are going to end up getting a better deal out of this whole thing, and it's going to be better for the overall country. What are your thoughts about that?
I can't, you know, I can't argue with it. I mean, that's been the talk of the theoretical standpoint. And you and I have talked about this quite a bit where, you know, theories on the economy are just that. They're theories. I mean, everyone can come out and say that they believe that this is the result. You know, they can point at historical information and say that this is what happened when Carter was president, you know, and all of these things, and say, obviously, this is, you know, going to be the case again. You know, it's that causation versus correlation, yada, yada. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where, because it happened one way at one point in time in history, doesn't mean that that's the only result that you'll see. So for me, like I was saying, I mean, it's really one of those deals where we're already in it. You know what I mean? You can't really, it's kind of like jumping out of a plane. Like, you can't jump out of a plane, be halfway down and say, well, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, you've got to trust that your parachute's going to work and that you're going to land safely. And that's where I'm at right now. I mean, I'm just in the place where I have to trust that my parachute's going to work and we're going to land safely. And I think it will. I mean, I think that, there are things that we can work out. I think there's a lot of solutions that can be made. And right now we're stuck in a proverbial, you know what, match at this point in time, and we're going to see who comes out ahead. And I think we have the power and the capability of coming out ahead for sure. You know, I was talking to my boss again this morning, and he was talking about the intellectual property and the importance of making sure that we kind of put our foot down when it comes to the thievery that is coming from that aspect of things. And so I'm, you know, like I said, I'm all in. We've jumped out of the plane. Now's the time to figure out how it works. And as a trader, you know, for you and for me, you just have to operate day by day and you know, block and tackle and make the moves that you feel will be right for you and your bottom line.
Yeah, no, again, I think that is exactly what we need to do. And I think this will actually bring some bigger opportunities to everybody, and I think that will work out to be the best deal. And again, if it creates more opportunity, and it may open the markets. You know, we've got certain quotas, we can only send so much, and now if we change all that, then all of a sudden we can send more, right?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's why if we gain respect and are able to really kind of, like I said, put our foot down, there's a lot of room there to gain. The biggest thing that I'm looking at right now is actually more of a domestic practice that we're starting to see. And those are the changes that we're seeing put in place with the RFS and these RIN waivers and things like that. I mean, there's a lot of moves that are going on from a domestic market standpoint too, that could actually have a far greater implication on the market overall, especially when combined with the concern over the tariff and ethanol, because the Chinese people are not going to eat, drink, you know, or do anything with ethanol. That's a step towards solving the pollution issue. And that is one of the tariffs, you know, tariffed products that really could have an overall influence in our ability to grind, you know, here domestically. So there's a lot of other issues at stake, but yeah, I think in the end, when it comes to the whole bean tariff and even the pork and beef and all of that, you know, China is the largest, I think they own, I think it's Smithfield is the largest pork producer in the United States. China owns it. You know, so it's one of those things where they're putting a tariff on pork. You know, but how does that work with their own product that they're exporting?
Well, get that. We're going to cover that when we come back from the break, because that is a great point. And that was actually my next question, Smithfield. And this is a bunch of hooey, as they like to say. And this is the Bubba Show with the Goddess of Grains at Goddess of Grains on Twitter, and also the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, Angie Setzer. And of course, this is the Bubba Show. Make sure that you check out our high school program, highschoolinvesting.com. And if you want to help us out, you can go to Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaTrading. And if you do so, I will give you a free week of our recommendations, and you can check out what's going on with what we do. And of course, don't forget to download the show every day at libertytalk.fm. That will give you our program, plus the Sporting Edge and Crypto Investor X and all the other programming that we have there for you. So make sure you check that out. This is The Bubba Show. We'll be back with more from Angie Setzer, the Goddess of Grains, right here on The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, we're coming right back after the break.
Fly me to the moon. Let me.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report. Bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, Angie, you mentioned something before we went to break, and that's, of course, Smithfield. And, you know, since China owns them and they are the largest pork producer in the world, what's the issue here? I mean, again, this is, again, I think there's more nonsense. And, of course, the minute the news came out, you know, obviously the meats got creamed and then they're all rallying and they're all up on the day right now. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, meats have been getting creamed. If you look back at, if you look at a hog chart, you can actually, and someone put it out the other day, and I kind of chuckled because 2 weeks ago, before the tariff on pork was announced, which was one of the first announced products, you know, with that whole reaction, we had the news conference about our tariffs being put on, and by that evening, we knew that pork was going to see a 25% import tariff. But if you look back to when we first announced the idea or the floating that we were going to be putting tariffs on the washing machines and solar panels, and floating other ideas on some other larger tariffs being put on, you could see the hog chart at that point in time, you know, basically just traded downward for the remainder. I mean, we've just been, we went from you know, trading at new highs to all of a sudden trading at new lows. And so the hog market has really been trading on this for quite some time, you know, far longer than anything else. And so that, I think that was part of the surprise with the soybean market overnight is we knew it was coming. So it was interesting to see how the reaction would come in, or how the reaction did take place. And so, yeah, it's above my pay grade. I'm not exactly sure how it works, how the subsidiaries are set up, and what that would mean for the Chinese buyer. But Smithfield is one of the largest, if not the largest, provider of pork in the United States, and they are owned by China. And so it's one of those things that, you know, I really don't know what it'll mean going forward, but their revenue in 2015 was $14.4 billion. And like I said, they have several subsidiaries and things of that nature. So they have their pork production or their hog imports and things of that nature, you know, somewhat cornered. And I guess you could say from an overall standpoint, and again, I don't understand, you know, 100% the intricacies that go into how their market structure works and stuff like that. But they just had a fire sale on pork. You know, basically they went from contract highs to contract lows, and that meant that they were able to provide a whole lot of hams for their nation at a very cheap price, you know, and so it's one of those things that China is they're well aware. And I mean, and they've spent a lot of money and a lot of capital on getting food production locked down in not just China. You know, so they have a lot of land ownership and a lot of their hand in a lot of different market structures over here, you know, right now and in Brazil and in Russia and everywhere. So, you know, when it comes down to it, there's a lot of things that you know, we're not 100% certain how it'll work for them. But I'm going to guess that it's going to benefit them in the long run with the way that they've played some of these games.
Oh, no, I look at, they've always got the idea. It goes back to the stealing of intellectual properties. I mean, that's the big argument here is, you know, you can't own a business in China without their permission and without them owning 50% of it. So that becomes a problem as well. And I think this is, you know, just purely a market that, you know, when you look at it and you look at the meats, and of course the meats have turned around. Now, I think that there's been some what we call forced liquidation in the meats over the last couple of weeks. I think that the banks have gotten a little bit nervous and they're forcing people out. You have any thoughts to that?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think that there's probably been some pretty substantial forced liquidation and panic. I mean, and you can't talk to a cattle fundamental trader without hearing about the wall of cattle and the lack of hook space. I mean, that's what anyone that I've talked to has mentioned that, you know, and if we lose the export market, you know, not only are we already overabundant in supply, you know, and having a wall of cattle and lack of hook space, and using air quotes with both of those lines, but we're going to lose our export demand too. Oh my gosh, you know, and so there's just been this feeling of negativity that has snowballed upon the producer. And so, yeah, there are a lot of bankers out there that are probably saying, cut your losses now. I mean, I have a customer that I work with that he tends to feed, he buys in feeders. A lot of times he'll buy in dairy bulls, bull calves, and feed them up. And he has a load of feeders right now. One load, one pot full, he has that scheduled to leave in October that he had sold and committed at a, you know, what would be considered a relatively wide basis throughout much of the Western beef market out here. But then he has another load of feeders that he doesn't have committed. And he's debating right now if he should just take them and dump them. And, you know, it's hard for me to tell someone who's obviously losing money in something that they should hold on, you know, in the fact that they could be facing losing even more money. But I think the reality right now is that the market is in panic mode. And that's what you're seeing when it comes to your meats, especially is this full on panic. I need to sell everything before it gets worse. And typically that's when you see a sign of a low in a market, you know, when it looks like it can't get better and that it's only going to get worse, that tends to be an indication of a bottom. But the hardest thing in the whole wide world is knowing that you have a physical product that you could take a substantial hit on, or you're already looking at taking a substantial hit on, and you could take an even further, you know, substantial hit. You know, it's hard to look in the face of danger and you know, walk away. So I think that's part of it too. I think we've seen this, you know, pure panic. I think we've seen some forced liquidation in the sense that no one wants to extend further capital to lose any more money than what they already are. And it's a real issue out there right now.
Well, we call it a blow off bottom or a blow off top. You know, it happens. Mm-hmm. Listen, fear and greed always drive the markets anyways. But now, don't you think, you know, if somebody's hedged, then the bank should understand how the hedge works, because then they don't have the risk. And I know that that's what we do. You and I both help hedge. But don't you think that bankers should actually have people in there to actually understand how the markets work as well, so they don't get to this? Because really all they're doing is punishing the poor farmer. Is that not right? I mean, you know, when they force liquidation, they're really just punishing the farmer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a struggle. I mean, that's what we've had a conversation before about it, where, you know, in 2008, when the market started to explode to the upside and a lot of elevators had much lower hedges and were trying to come up with capital for margin calls. And of course, the banks were already struggling with the issues that were going on in the outside market and things like that. You know, but you had people that truly did not understand how hedging works. You had people that were too busy looking at the risk of what if these farmers don't deliver, when the reality is a significant percentage of farmers will deliver upon contracted, you know, agreements. You know, you may have a couple that'll try to walk, but the truth is a contract's a contract, and we still work in a handshake industry, at least on my end, for the most part. And so when you have people that don't quite understand how hedging works or how margin calls work or how protecting your risk, you know, works from an overall standpoint, it makes for a difficult environment to operate in, honestly. And so that is a struggle that we see out there right now, is, you know, a lack of understanding and a lack of communication. I think that's one thing too, that, you know, from a farmer standpoint or a producer standpoint, you need to have an open line of communication with your banker, you know, just to kind of explain what's going on too, because that lack of communication begets fear. But from an overall standpoint, yeah, forced liquidation is a terrible thing. I hate to see it. I mean, I've seen it in the past where, from a farmer standpoint, an elevator maybe has forced a farmer out of a bad basis contract or something like that, which is a detail that we don't need to really go into, but I've seen farmers be forced liquidated in that standpoint as well. And it's only made, you know, it turned a bad situation worse for them. And that's the last thing you want to see.
No, right. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, when you do that, you really have created a bigger mess. And we've seen that, you know, if you've watched the last 6 or 7 days, every day, like it right before the bell, a big seller comes in. Either so somebody's either really stuck or you're getting forced out. And of course, it's hard to determine which one it is, but we know that there's an issue because somebody is trying to wait all day and hope that the markets rally and then they get creamed, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the worst part when they don't have an exit strategy. And you know, you and I both know that the market it works to expel the weakest players as well. It's almost as though the markets know exactly what situation you're in. I mean, you trade, you've felt it before. I know I have, where it's like, how do they know where my order is and why do they keep, you know, squeezing me on this thing? But that's the reality. I mean, the market has the ability and it's hard to tell. You know, everyone always says, you know, is the low near? Well, yeah, you can, it feels as though the low is near. But like I said, one of the hardest parts of my job is trying to tell someone to hold on when they've already held on. And they're not 100% certain if they can even stomach, you know, a further turn to the downside. So it's definitely a hard part to be in. But the last thing you want to see in any type of situation is a forced liquidation. Because like I said, it takes a bad situation and makes it a worse one.
And that's why they have to be hedged. And that's why they got to call us so they can get themselves taken care of. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains at Twitter, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And of course, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, don't forget to download the show every single day at libertytalk.fm and enjoy the rest of our content, 24-hour-a-day programming, and don't forget to get Bubba's Daily Update, which is available to you for free. All you have to do is go to bubbatrading.com, and I will give you a recap of what happened that day and a look forward to tomorrow, and you would get a much better view of what's actually happening and how to read the markets. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be back with more from Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains. So, Angie, you know, obviously there's a lot of turmoil, a lot of things going on. Now, what are you doing for people right now, and what are you advising them to do from a standpoint of protection or whatever? I mean, we're still higher than we were when this all started.
Yeah, and that's the most perfect point at this. You know what I mean? Like, that is very, I think, something that needs to be taken into consideration, that we're basically back to where we were right when, just before the USDA report was released last week. So, you know, for us, from an overall standpoint on the corn side, you know, we still have folks putting hedges in place. We still have people doing what they need to do. I mean, maybe not necessarily today, but it's been done. Target orders have been entered. Target orders at the next level have been entered. And so, like I said, I mean, for me, there's a lot of people that are in the industry that are, oh, wow, we're just swamped, aren't we? You know, you're probably so busy. No, I've had one phone call today, and that was simply to let me know that they were going to start shipping the corn that they had sold last week. You know, so it's one of those things where we're prepared. We have been prepared. I do have some customers that may have some puts on that we may look at, you know, kind of taking some of that equity in that position and pocketing it and, you know, using the original investment to re-own at a different value, you know, something of that nature. But that's few and far between too, you know, because we don't do much. For me, every option strategy that we have on has to be attached to a cash contract as well. So it's one of those things where in our neck of the woods right now, it's pretty quiet. I use these times to sit down and you know, let folks kind of reflect upon what they wanted to try to accomplish. And I can say, you know, wholeheartedly and enthusiastically at this point, we've had a lot of great opportunities. I mean, corn was within a penny of last year's high for the December contract. And so anyone that had wished that they had made sales early on enough to cover their input costs and make themselves feel comfortable, you know, going into the production season, they've already done it. I talked to a friend of mine that, you know, we bounce ideas off each other. He's a producer in the Southern Plains. And he said, you know, after having, you know, kind of chatted with you and putting these plans in place, I've had all of my early targets hit. And on a day like today, I can shut the screen off and I don't lose a wink of sleep. He said, I've already covered my risk. I'm going into the production year, you know, 100% confident in what I've done. And I'll wait and see if the market moves higher for the remainder of bushels that I have to sell. If it doesn't, then I will, you know, make sure that I have the sales in place, you know, prior to harvest, and my average will still be good. And so, yeah, I mean, from an overall standpoint, we're not really doing much. We're getting prepared if we see a significant recovery. But aside from that, we're going to let the market shake out for a couple days, and I will look at other basis opportunities that will come along typically with a downturn in the market, and that'll be my job in the short term. Some spreads, too. You know, usually if you have a big bearish market move, you get some opportunities for carry and spreads. And as an elevator manager, that's where I really make my money. And so, you know, that's what I'm also doing is putting some spread trades on, or looking to put some spread trades on when the market gives me the opportunity to do so.
And I think that's what we have to, and I think that's the message we have to convey to everybody, is to recognize the opportunities that are out there for you. And, you know, just because the market breaks down does not make it a bad thing. It could be an opportunity. And just like when it gets way up there, you have to be prepared to take some risk off the table. And I think that's one of the things that many miss more than anything, is the opportunities that the markets actually provide. I mean, these dramatic moves are a reason to put yourself in a better position, are they not?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think they're an indication of why you need to be able to, you know, why you have to be prepared. That's the thing, is that this is showing me, you know, and showing a producer, I guess, the risk that's in place and the things that you need to be aware of. And if on a day like today, you sit and you panic over what's going on, and you know that you wish you would have done things, you know, in a different way. You know, if you would have taken advantage. So I have a lot of people, well, I'm going to sell 1060 beans the next time we get them. Well, truth is, you really didn't have the opportunity to actually sell 1060 because that was just the high. It didn't trade through it, so there's no guarantee it filled. But sure, go ahead and stick an order in at 1059.5 if you want to. But the reality is, that should have been a plan in place, you know, prior to the market getting up to that level. If that was a number that you wanted to sell, and you know that that's a number you want to sell because of a day like today, then that's an order that you just need to have in place and you know, kind of go from there.
Yeah, I mean, panic or puke, you lose. I mean, that's just the way that it goes. I mean, you know, again, the markets are the markets. And, you know, I mean, if you look at the equity markets, I mean, they were down 500. They're now up on the day. So, again, you can't bewilder or change what the markets are doing. The markets have done the same thing for a gazillion years. I mean, that has not changed in the history of the way the market functions. I think that's the biggest thing that people need to learn, is how the markets actually work. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, I agree 100%. I think that's one of the biggest things that folks are lacking, is the understanding that it's the market's job to have volatility. It's the market's job to do the things that it's doing. And you know, the market also provides you a risk management tool. So you need to understand, you know, why you have big swings like this, but you also need to be well aware of how you protect yourself ahead of them.
So when you look now, looking into the future, you and I were both bullish corn and wheat. Are you still bullish corn and wheat?
I think the support underneath corn and wheat remains. I'm bullish wheat at these pricing levels. I think corn is probably going to establish, or probably has established, its new range. You know what I mean? It's a bit higher than, it's quite a bit higher than where it was on the front month. I mean, you're still up 37 cents or so from the low that was put in place on the front corn month there. Now we're in the May and, you know, up pretty substantially. So I think that's still providing opportunities for farmers with old crop bushels. You know, I understand, you know, those across the country have different basis levels and cash values that they're looking at. But for my customers, you know, we're still looking at 390 cash corn delivered into an ethanol facility local to us. So that's still a heck of a deal versus where they were, you know, sitting even 6 weeks ago or so. And so I think corn still has some opportunities. I think if folks haven't been hedging as this market has rallied, then there's opportunities to do so still at this point in time. I'd have orders in again at the higher end of things. And so, you know, for me, I think wheat's got some pretty substantial upside. I think you could see wheat trade 50 cents higher again here before we hit June 1st. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised that, you know, I'd be a buyer of July wheat at this price. Here, based on what I'm seeing on the southern plains and in my neck of the woods, and the idea that I think spring wheat acreage was way overestimated in last week's report based on the weather conditions that we're seeing right now, you know, in the northern plains. And so I think I'm bullish wheat. I think corn has reasonable support underneath it. I don't know if it necessarily needs to move much higher at this point in time until we get a better feel for what we're looking at from a production standpoint. And soybeans, I mean, yes, we saw a pretty substantial downward move here right now versus where we were. But, you know, I think at 1060, they were, you know, 80 cents almost overpriced. So I wouldn't be surprised to see soybeans kind of maintain a weaker market structure as we go ahead. But I definitely at this point in time am somewhat neutral on them, because I think they've corrected, you know, quite a bit of that too high of a pricing standpoint they were at. I mean, like I said, we're 40 some cents off the high end, you know, just put in place here a week ago. So I think that soybeans have corrected themselves enough to where I'd probably take a bit more of a neutral stance on them.
I agree. And I'd say corn and wheat both make new highs. This is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. As always, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I always love it.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every single day, and help us reach our goals of 1 million downloads a month. And we will see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks so much. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.